Chapter 1 "Let me kill him," Kara said, her boot strikes sounding like rawhide mallets hammering the polished marble floor. The supple leather boots Kalan wore beneath her elegant white confessor's dress whispered against the cold stone as she tried to keep pace without letting her legs break into a run. "No." Kara exhibited no response, keeping her blue eyes ahead to the wide corridor stretching into the distance. A dozen leather and chainmail-clad Daharan soldiers, their unadorned swords sheathed or crescent-bladed battle axes hooked on belt hangers, crossed at an intersection just ahead. Though their weapons weren't drawn, every wooden hilt was gripped in a ready fist as vigilant eyes scrutinized the shadows among the doorways and columns to each side. Their hasty bows toward Kalan only briefly interrupted their attention to their task. "We can't just kill him," Kalan explained. "We need answers." An eyebrow lifted over one icy blue eye. "Oh, I didn't say he wouldn't give us answers before he dies. He will answer any question you have when I'm finished with him." A mirthless smile ghosted across her flawless face. "That is the job of a Mord Sith, getting people to answer questions." She paused as the smile returned to widen with professional satisfaction. "Before they die." Kalan heaved a sigh. "Kara, that's no longer your job. Your life. Your job now is to protect Richard. That is why you should let me kill him. We should not take a risk by letting this man live. No. We first have to find out what's going on, and we're not going to start out doing it the way you want." Kara's smile, humorless as it was, had vanished again. "As you wish, Mother Confessor." Kalan wondered how the woman had managed to change into her skin-tight, red leather outfit so fast. Whenever there was so much as a whiff of trouble, at least one of the three Mord Sith seemed to materialize out of nowhere in her red leather. Red, as they often pointed out, didn't show blood.
"Are you sure he said that, this man? Those were his words?"
"Yes, Mother Confessor, his exact words. You should let me kill him before he has a chance to try to bring them to pass."
Kalan ignored the repeated request as they hurried on down the hall.
"Where's Richard?"
"You wish me to get Lord Rawl?"
"No. I just want to know where he is in case there's trouble."
"I would say that this qualifies as trouble."
"You said that there must be 200 soldiers holding weapons on him. How much trouble can one man cause with all those swords, axes, and arrows pointed at him?"
"My former master, Darkan Rawl, knew that steel alone could not always ward danger. That is why he had Mord Sith nearby and at the ready."
"That evil man would kill people without even bothering to determine if they were really a danger to him. Richard isn't like that, and neither am I. You know that if there is a true threat, I'm not shy about eliminating it. But if this man is more than he seems, then why is he so timidly cowering before all that steel? Besides, as a confessor, I am hardly defenseless against threats that steel won't stop. We have to keep our heads. Let's not start leaping to judgments that may be unwarranted. If you don't think he could be trouble, then why am I nearly running just to keep up with you?"
Kalan realized that she was a half a step ahead of the woman. She slowed her pace to a brisk walk.
"Because it's Richard we're talking about," she said in a near whisper.
Kara smirked.
"You're as worried as I." "Of course I am. But for all we know, killing this man, if he is more than he seems, could be springing a snare."
"You could be right, but that is the purpose for Mord Sith."
"So where is Richard?"
Kara gripped the red leather at her wrist and stretched her armor-backed glove tighter onto her hand as she flexed her fist. Her Aegil, an awesome weapon that appeared to be nothing more than a finger-width, foot-long red leather rod, dangled from a fine gold chain at her right wrist, ever at the ready. One just like it, but no weapon in Kalan's hands, hung on a chain around Kalan's neck. It had been a gift from Richard, a gift that symbolized the pain and sacrifice they had both endured.
"He is out behind the palace in one of the private parks,"
Kara gestured over her shoulder.
"The one that way. Reyna and Berdine are with him."
Kalan was relieved to hear that the other two Mord Sith were watching over him.
"Something to do with his surprise for me?"
"What surprise?"
Kalan smiled.
"Surely he's told you, Kara."
Kara snatched a glimpse out of the corner of her eye.
"Of course he has told me."
"Then what is it?"
"He also told me not to tell you."
Kalan shrugged.
"I won't tell him that you told me."
Kara's laugh, like her smile before, bore no humor. Lord Rawl has a peculiar way of finding out things, especially those things you wish him not to know.
Colin knew the truth of that.
So what's he doing out there?
The muscles in Kara's jaw flexed.
Outdoor things. You know Lord Rawl, he likes to do outdoor things.
Colin glanced over to see that Kara's face had turned nearly as red as her leather outfit.
What sort of outdoor things?
Kara cleared her throat into her armored fist.
He's taming chipmunks.
He's what?
I can't hear you.
Kara waved an impatient hand. He said that the chipmunks have come out to test the warming weather. He's taming them. Her cheeks rounded as she huffed.
With seeds.
Colin smiled at the thought of Richard, the man she loved, the man who had seized command of Dahara and had much of the Midlands now eating out of his hand, having a fine afternoon teaching chipmunks to eat seeds out of his hand.
Well, that sounds innocent enough, feeding seeds to chipmunks.
Kara flexed her armored fist again as they swept between two Daharan guards.
He's teaching them to eat those seeds, she said through clenched teeth, out of Raina and Verdine's hands. The two of them were giggling.
She aimed a mortified expression toward the ceiling as she threw her hands up. Her aegil swung on the gold chain at her wrist.
Mord Sith! Giggling!
Colin pressed her lips tight, trying to keep from breaking into laughter. Kara pulled her long blonde braid forward, over her shoulder, stroking it in a way that provoked in Colin an unsettling memory of the way Shota, the witch-woman, stroked her snakes.
Well,
Colin said, trying to cool the other woman's indignation,
maybe it's not by their choice. They are bonded to him. Perhaps Richard ordered it, and they're simply obeying him.
Kara shot her an incredulous look. Colin knew that any of the three Mord Sith would defend Richard to the death. They had shown themselves prepared to sacrifice their lives without hesitation. But though they were bonded to him through magic, they disregarded his orders wantonly if they judged them trivial, unimportant, or unwise. Colin imagined that it was because Richard had given them their freedom from the rigid principles of their profession, and they enjoyed exercising that freedom. Darkon Rawl, their former master, Richard's father, would have killed them in a heartbeat had he even suspected that they were considering disobeying his orders, no matter how trivial they were.
The sooner you wed Lord Rawl, the better. Then instead of teaching chipmunks to eat out of Mord Sith hands, he will be eating out of yours.
Colin exhaled in a soft, lilting laugh, thinking about being his wife. It wouldn't be long now.
Richard will have my hand.
But you should know as well as anyone that he will not be eating out of it, and I wouldn't want him to. If you regain your senses, come see me, and I will teach you how. Kara turned her attention to the alert Daharan soldiers. Men-at-arms were rushing everywhere, checking every hall and looking behind every door, no doubt at Kara's insistence.
Egan is with Lord Rawl, too. He should be safe while we see to this man.
Colin's mirth withered.
How did he get in here, anyway? Did he come in with the petitioners?
No. A professional chill settled back into Kara's tone. But I intend to find out. From what I gather, he just walked up to a patrol of guards not far from the council chambers and asked where he could find Lord Rawl, as if just anyone can walk in and ask to see the master of Dahara, as if he was a head butcher that anyone can go to if they want a choice cut of mutton.
That's when the guards asked him why he wanted to see Richard?
Kara nodded.
I think we should kill him.
Realization wormed up Colin's spine in a cold tingle. Kara wasn't simply an aggressive bodyguard, unconcerned about spilling the blood of others. She was afraid. She was afraid for Richard.
I want to know how he got in here. He presented himself to a patrol inside the palace. He shouldn't have been able to get inside, wandering around unfettered. What if we have a hitherto unknown breach in security? Wouldn't it be better to find out before another comes without the courtesy of announcing himself?
We can find out if you let me do it my way.
We don't know enough yet. He could end up dead before we find out anything. Then the danger to Richard could become greater.
All right, Kara said with a sigh. We will do it your way, as long as you understand that I have orders to follow.
What orders?
Lord Rawl told us to protect you as we would protect him. With a toss of her head, Kara flicked her blonde braid back over her shoulder. If you are not careful, Mother Confessor, and needlessly endanger Lord Rawl with your restraint, I will withdraw my permission for Richard to keep you.
Colin laughed.
Her laughter died out when Kara didn't so much as smile.
She was never entirely sure when the moored Sith were joking and when they were being deadly serious.
"In here," Colin said. "It's shorter this way. And besides, I want to see what petitioners are waiting, in view of our strange visitor. He could even be a diversion to draw our attention away from someone else, the true threat."
Kara's brow twitched as if she had been slighted.
"Why do you think I had petitioners' hall sealed and ringed with guards?"
"You did it surreptitiously, I hope. There's no need to frighten the wits out of innocent petitioners."
"I told the officers not to frighten the people in there if they didn't have to, but our first responsibility is to protect Lord Rawl."
Colin nodded. She couldn't argue with that.
Two heavily muscled guards bowed, along with 20 others nearby, before pulling open the tall, brass-bound doors leading to an arcaded passageway. A stone rail supported by fat, vase-shaped balusters ran along each of the white marble pillars. The barrier, separating the petitioners in the 100-foot-long room from the official's passageway, was symbolic rather than real. Skylights 30 feet overhead lit the waiting room, but left the length of the passageway to the muted golden light of lamps hung in the peak of each small vault in its ceiling. It was a long-standing custom for people, petitioners, to come to the Confessor's Palace to seek any number of things, from settlement of disagreements over the rights of peddlers to coveted street corners, to officials of different lands come seeking armed intervention in border disputes. Matters that could be handled by city officials were directed to the proper offices. Matters brought by dignitaries of the lands, if those matters were deemed to be important enough or could be handled in no other way, were taken before the council. Petitioner's Hall was where officers of protocol determined the disposition of requests. When Darkon Rawl, Richard's father, had attacked the Midlands, many of the officials in Adendrill had been killed, among them Saul Witherin, the chief of protocol, along with most of his office. Richard had defeated Darkon Rawl, and, being the gifted heir, had ascended to Master of Dahara. He had ended the bickering and battling among the lands of the Midlands by demanding their surrender in order to forge them all into a force capable of withstanding the common threat from the old world, from the Imperial Order. Colin found it unsettling to be the Mother Confessor who had reigned over the end of the Midlands as a formal entity, a union of sovereign lands. But she knew that her first responsibility was to the lives of the people, not to tradition. If not stopped, the Imperial Order would cast the world into slavery, and the people of the Midlands would be its chattel. Richard had accomplished what his father could not, but did so for entirely different reasons. She loved Richard, and knew his benevolent intent in seizing power. Soon they would be wedded, and their marriage would unite the Midlands and Dahara in peace and unity for all time. More than that, though, it would be a personal fulfillment of their love and deepest desire, to be one. Colin missed Saul Witherin. He had been a capable aide. With the council now dead, too, and the Midlands now a part of Dahara, matters of protocol were in disarray. A few frustrated Daharan officers were standing at the railing, attempting to minister to the petitioner's needs. As she entered, Colin's gaze swept the waiting crowd, analyzing the nature of problems brought to the palace this day. By their dress, most appeared to be people from the surrounding city of Adendrill, laborers, shopkeepers, and merchants. She saw a knot of children she knew from the day before, when Richard had taken her to watch them playing a game of Jala. It was the first time she had seen the fast-paced game, and it had been an entertaining diversion for a couple of hours, to watch children play and laugh. The children probably wanted Richard to come watch another game. He had been an ardent supporter of each team. Even if he had picked one team to cheer over the other, Colin doubted it would have made any difference. Children were drawn to Richard, seeming to instinctively sense his kind heart. Colin recognized several diplomats from a few of the smaller lands, who she hoped had come to accept Richard's offer of a peaceful surrender and union into Daharan rule. She knew the leaders of those lands, and was expecting them to heed her urging to join with them in the cause of freedom. She recognized, too, a group of diplomats from some of the larger lands that had standing armies. They had been expected, and later that day Richard and Colin were to meet with them, along with any other newly arrived representatives, to hear their decision. She wished Richard would find himself something more suitable to wear. His woods clothes had served him well, but he now needed to present a more fitting image of the position he found himself in. He was so much more than a woods guide now.
Having served nearly her whole life as a person of authority, Colin knew that it often smoothed matters of leadership if you matched people's expectations. Colin doubted people who needed a woods guide would have followed Richard if he hadn't dressed for the woods. In a way, Richard was their guide in this treacherous new world of untested allegiances and new enemies. He often asked her advice. She was going to have to talk to him about his clothes. When the people assembled saw the Mother Confessor striding into the passageway, conversation stilled, and they began going to a knee in deep bows. Despite the fact that she was of an unprecedentedly young age for the post, there was no one of higher authority in the Midlands than the Mother Confessor. The Mother Confessor was the Mother Confessor, no matter the face of the woman who held the office. People bowed not so much to the woman as to that ancient authority. Matters of confessors were an enigma to most people of the Midlands. Confessors chose the Mother Confessor. To confessors, age was of secondary consideration. Though she was chosen to preserve the freedoms and rights of the people of the Midlands, people rarely saw it in those terms. To most, a ruler was a ruler. Some were good, some were bad. As the ruler of rulers, the Mother Confessor encouraged the good and suppressed the bad. If a ruler proved bad enough, it was within her power to eliminate them. That was the ultimate purpose of a Mother Confessor. To most people, though, such far-removed matters of governance simply seemed the squabbling of rulers. In the sudden silence that filled Petitioner's Hall, Colin paused to acknowledge the gathered visitors. A young woman, standing against the far wall, watched as all those around her fell to one knee. She glanced in Colin's direction, back to those kneeling, and then followed suit. Colin's brow tightened. In the Midlands, the length of a woman's hair denoted her power and standing. Matters of power, no matter how trivial they might seem on the surface, were taken seriously in the Midlands. Not even a queen's hair was allowed to be as long as a confessor's, and no confessor's hair was as long as that of the Mother Confessor. This woman had a thick mass of brown hair close to the length of Colin's. Colin knew nearly every person of high rank in the Midlands. It was her duty, and she took it seriously. A woman with hair that long was obviously a person of high standing, but Colin didn't recognize her. There was likely to be no man or woman in the entire city other than Colin who would outrank the woman, if she was, in fact, from the Midlands.
"Rise, my children," Colin said, in formal response to the tops of the waiting, bowed heads.
Dresses and coats rustled as everyone began coming to their feet, most keeping their eyes to the floor out of respect or needless fear. The woman rose to her feet, twisting a simply made kerchief in her fingers, watching those around her. She turned her brown eyes to the floor as most of the others were.
"Kara," Colin whispered, "could that woman there, with the long hair, be from Dahara?"
Kara had been watching her, too. She had learned some of the customs of the Midlands. Though Kara's long blonde hair was about the length of Colin's, she was Daharan. They didn't live by the same customs.
"Her nose is too cute to be Daharan. I'm serious. Do you think she could be Daharan?"
Kara studied the woman a moment longer.
"I doubt it. Daharan women don't wear flower print dresses, nor are the dresses they do wear of that cut. But clothes can be changed to fit the occasion or to fit in with local people."
The dress didn't really fit the local dress of Aidendrill, but it might not be so out of place in other, more remote areas of the Midlands. Colin nodded and turned to a waiting captain, motioning him over. He leaned his head close as she spoke in a low tone.
"There is a woman with long brown hair standing against the wall in the back, over my left shoulder. Do you see who I'm talking about?"
"The pretty one in the blue kirtle."
"Yes. Do you know why she's here?"
"She said she wished to speak with Lord Rawl."
Colin's brow drew tighter. She noticed that Kara's did, too.
"What about?"
"She said that she's looking for a man, or a Sai something. I didn't recognize his name. She said he's been missing since last autumn, and she was told that Lord Rawl would be able to help her."
"Is that right?" Colin said. "And did she say what business she has with this missing man?"
The captain glanced to the woman and then brushed his sandy hair back from his forehead.
"She said that she's to marry him."
Colin nodded.
"It could be that she's a dignitary, but if she is, I'm embarrassed to admit that I don't know her name. The captain glanced at a tattered list with scribbles all over it. He turned the paper and scanned the other side until he found what he was looking for.
She said her name was Nadine. She gave no title.
Well, please see to it that Lady Nadine is taken to a private waiting room where she will be comfortable. Tell her that I will come speak with her and see if I can help. Have dinner brought to her along with anything else she might require. Give her my apology and tell her that I have something of vital importance that I must attend to first, but I will come see her as soon as I am able, and that I wish to do what I can to help her. Colin could understand the woman's distress if she really was separated from her love and was searching for him. Colin had been in that situation herself and knew well the anguish.
I'll see to it at once, Mother Confessor.
One other thing, Captain. Colin watched the woman twisting her kerchief. Tell Lady Nadine that there is trouble about, what with the war with the old world, and that for her own safety we must insist that she remain in the room until I can come to speak with her. Post a heavy guard outside the room, place archers at a safe distance down the hall to either side of the door. If she comes out, insist that she must return to the room at once and wait. If you must, tell her that it is by my command. If she still tries to leave... Colin looked into the captain's waiting blue eyes. Kill her. The captain bowed as Colin swept on through the passageway, Kara right at her heels.
Well, well, Kara said once outside the petitioner's hall. At last the Mother Confessor comes to her senses. I knew I had a good reason for allowing Lord Rawl to keep you. You will make him a worthy wife.
Colin turned down the corridor toward the room where guards held the man. I haven't changed my mind about anything, Kara. Considering our strange visitor, I'm giving the Lady Nadine every chance to live, every chance I can afford to give. But you're mistaken if you think I'll balk at doing whatever it takes to protect Richard. Besides being the man I love more than life itself, Richard is a man of vital importance to the freedom of the people of both Tahara and the Midlands. There's no telling what the Imperial Order would try in order to get to him. Kara smiled, sincerely this time.
I know he loves you the same. That's why I don't like you going to see this man. Lord Rawl may separate me from my hide if he thinks I allowed you near danger.
Richard is one born with the gift. I, too, have been born with magic. Darkin Rawl sent quads to kill the confessors because there is little danger to a confessor from one man. Colin felt the familiar yet distant anguish of their deaths. Distant because it seemed so long ago, though it had been hardly a year. For months, in the beginning, she had felt as if she should be dead along with her sister confessors, and that she had somehow betrayed them by escaping all the traps laid for her. Now, she was the last. With a flick of her wrist, Kara snapped her Aegil into her fist.
Even a man like Lord Rawl, born with a gift? Even a wizard?
Even a wizard. And even if, unlike Richard, he knows how to use his power. I not only know how to use mine, I am very experienced at it. I long ago lost count of the number. As Colin's words trailed off, Kara considered her Aegil, rolled it in her fingers.
I guess there is even less than little danger with me there.
When they reached the richly carpeted and paneled corridor they were seeking, it was thick with soldiers and bristling with steel from swords, axes, and pikes. The man was being held in a small, elegant reading room near the rather simple one Richard liked to use for meeting with officers and for studying the journal he had found in the wizard's keep. The soldiers hadn't wanted to risk an escape attempt and had simply stuffed the man in the room nearest to the spot where they had found him, pinning him down until it could be decided what was to be done. Colin gently took the elbow of a soldier to urge him back out of the way. The muscles of his bare arm felt as hard as iron. His pike, pointed toward the closed door, could have hardly been more steady had it been embedded in granite. There had to be 50 pikes likewise aimed at the silent door. More men, gripping swords or axes, hunkered beneath the pike points. The guard turned as Colin tugged on his arm.
Let me through, soldier.
The man gave way. Others glanced back and began moving aside. Kara shouldered her way ahead of Colin, pushing men out of the way. They did so reluctantly, not out of disrespect, but out of concern for the danger that waited beyond the door. Even as they moved aside, they kept their weapons trained on the thick oak door. Inside, the windowless, dimly lit room smelled of leather and sweat. A lanky man squatted on the edge of an embroidered footstool. He seemed too spare, should he make the wrong move, to permit all the steel aimed at him to find a virgin patch to penetrate. His young eyes dithered among the steel and grim glares until he caught sight of Callan's approaching white dress. His tongue darted out to wet his lips as he looked up expectantly. When the burly soldiers in leather and chainmail behind him saw Callan and Kara forcing their way into the room, one of them landed the side of his boot on the small of the young man's back, pitching him forward.
"Kneel, you filthy cur!"
The young man, dressed in an outsized soldier's uniform that looked to have been scrounged together from dissimilar sources, peered up at Callan, then over his shoulder at the man who had kicked him. He ducked his head of disheveled dark hair and shielded it with a gangly arm.
"That's enough," Callan said, her voice quietly authoritative.
"Kara and I wish to speak with him. All of you wait outside, please." The soldiers balked, reluctant to lift a weapon from the young man who still cowered on the floor.
"You heard her," Kara said. "Out!"
"But,"
an officer began.
"You doubt that a moored Sith is capable of handling this one scrawny man? Now, go wait outside."
Callan was surprised that Kara hadn't raised her voice. Moored Sith didn't have to raise their voices to get people to follow their orders, but still it surprised her, considering Kara's nervousness about the young man before them. The men began withdrawing, turning sideways to eye the intruder on the floor as they filed out the door. The knuckles of the officer's fist on his sword hilt were white. As he backed out last, he gently closed the door with his other hand. The young man looked up from under his arm to the two women standing three strides away.
"Are you going to have me killed?"
Callan didn't answer the question directly.
"We have come to talk with you. I am Callan Amnell, the Mother Confessor."
"Mother Confessor!"
He straightened on his knees. A boyish grin swept onto his face.
"Why, you're beautiful. I never expected you to be so beautiful."
He put a hand to a knee and began to rise. Kara's Ajeel was instantly at the ready.
"Stay where you are."
He froze, staring at the red Ajeel before his face, and then lowered the knee back onto the fringe of the crimson carpet. Lamps on the fluted mahogany pilasters supporting shallow pediments over bookcases to each side of the room cast flickering light across his bony face. He was hardly more than a boy.
"Can I have my weapons back, please? I need my sword. If I can't have that, then I'd like my knife, at least."
Kara heaved an irritated sigh, but Callan spoke first.
"You are in a very precarious position, young man. Neither of us is in the mood to be indulgent if this is some kind of prank."
He nodded earnestly.
"I understand. I'm not playing a game, I swear."
"Then tell me what you said to the soldiers." His grin returned as he lifted a hand, gesturing casually toward the door.
"Well, like I was telling those men when I was..."
Fists at her side, Callan advanced a stride.
"I told you this is no game. You're only alive by my grace. I want to know what you're doing here, and I want to know right now. Tell me what you said."
The young man blinked.
"I'm an assassin sent by Emperor Jigang. I'm here to kill Richard Rawl. Can you direct me to him, please?"
Chapter 2
"Now,"
Kara said in a dangerous voice,
"can I kill him?"
The incongruous nature of this harmless-looking, skinny young man, kneeling, seemingly helpless in enemy territory, surrounded by hundreds, thousands of brutish Dharan soldiers, saying so openly and confidently that he intended to assassinate Richard, had Callan's heart hammering against her ribs. No one was this foolish. She realized, only after the fact, that she had retreated a step. She ignored Kara's question and kept her attention riveted on the young man.
"And just how do you think you could accomplish such a task?" "Well,"
he said in an offhanded manner as he exhaled,
"I had designs on using my sword, or if I must, my knife."
His smile returned, but it was no longer boyish. His eyes had taken on a steely set that belied his young face.
"That's why I need them back, you see."
"You'll not be getting your weapons back." Disdain powered the dismissive shrug of his shoulders.
"No matter. I have other ways to kill him."
"You'll not be killing Richard. You have my word on that. Your only hope now is to cooperate and tell us everything of your plan. How did you get in here?" His smirk mocked her.
"Walked.
Walked right in. No one paid me any mind. They're not too smart, your men."
"They're smart enough to have you under their swords," Kara pointed out.
He ignored her. His eyes remained locked on Callan's.
"And if we don't let you have your sword and knife back," she asked, "then what?"
"Then things will get messy. Richard Rohr will only suffer greatly. That's why Emperor Jagang sent me, to offer him the mercy of a quick death. The Emperor is a man of compassion and wishes to avoid any undue suffering. He is basically a man of peace, the Dreamwalker, but also one of iron determination."
"I'm afraid I'll have to be killing you too, Mother Confessor, to spare you the suffering of what's to come if you resist. I have to admit, though, that I don't like the idea of killing such a beautiful woman."
The grin widened.
"Rather a waste."
Callan found his confidence grating. To hear him claim that the Dreamwalker was compassionate turned her stomach. She knew better.
"What suffering?"
He spread his hands.
"I am but a grain of sand. The Emperor does not share his plans with me. I am but simply sent to do his bidding. His bidding is that you and Richard are to be eliminated. If you don't let me kill him mercifully, then Richard will be destroyed. I'm told that it won't be pleasant, so why don't you just let me get it over with?"
"You must be dreaming," Kara said.
His gaze shifted to the moored Sith.
"Dreaming?
Maybe you're dreaming. Maybe I'm your worst nightmare."
"I don't have nightmares," Kara said. "I give them."
"Really?" he taunted. "In that ridiculous outfit? What are you pretending to be, anyway? Maybe you're dressed like that to scare the birds away from the spring planting?"
Callan realized that the man didn't know what a moored Sith was, but she wondered how she could ever have thought he looked hardly more than a boy. His demeanor was one of age and experience. This was no boy. The air crackled with peril. Remarkably, Kara only smiled. Callan's breathing stilled when she realized the man was standing, and she couldn't recall seeing him come to his feet. His gaze shifted, and one of the lamps went dark. The remaining lamp cast harsh, flickering light against one side of his face, letting the other side hide in shadow. But for Callan, that act had brought his nature, his true threat, out of the shadows. This man commanded the gift. Her resolve to spare a possible innocent, unnecessary violence evaporated with the heat of need to protect Richard. This man had been given a chance. Now he was going to confess all he knew. He was going to confess it to a confessor. She had but to touch him, and it would be over. Callan had walked among the thousands of corpses of innocent people slaughtered by the Order. When she had seen the women and children in Ebonitia butchered at Jagang's command, she had sworn undying vengeance against the Imperial Order. This man had proven himself to be part of the Imperial Order and the enemy of free people. He did the Dreamwalker's bidding. She focused on the familiar flush of magic deep within herself, always at the ready. A confessor's magic wasn't released so much as her restraint on it was simply withdrawn. The act was faster even than thought. It was the lightning of instinct. No confessor enjoyed using her power to destroy a person's mind. But unlike some confessors, Callan didn't hate what she did, what she was born to. It was simply part of who she was. She didn't maliciously use what she was given, but used her magic to protect others. She was at peace with herself, with what she was and what she could do. Richard was perhaps the first to see her for herself and care about her despite her power. He didn't irrationally fear the unknown, fear what she was. Instead, he had come to know her and to love her, confessor's power and all. For that reason only, he could be with her without her power destroying him when they shared their love. She intended to use that power now to protect Richard, and for that reason it was as close as she ever came to valuing her ability. She had but to touch this man, and the threat would be eliminated. Retribution was at hand for a willing minion of Emperor Jagang. Keeping her gaze firmly fixed on the man, Callan held up an admonishing finger to Kara.
"He's mine. Leave this to me."
But when his squinting gaze sought the remaining lamp, Kara swept between them. The air cracked as she backhanded him with her armored glove. Callan nearly screamed in rage at the interference. Sprawled across the carpet, the man sat up, looking genuinely surprised. Blood ran down his chin from a split in his lower lip. His look changed to genuine displeasure. Kara towered over him.
"What is your name?"
Callan couldn't believe that Kara, who had always professed to fear magic, seemed to be deliberately provoking a man who had just shown his command of it. He rolled away from her and into a crouch. His eyes were on Callan, but he spoke to Kara.
I don't have time for court buffoons.
With a smile, his gaze flicked to the lamp. The room plunged into darkness. Colin dove for the spot on the floor where he hunkered. She had but to touch him and it would be over. She caught only air before hitting the empty floor. In the pitch black, she wasn't sure which way he had darted. She snatched wildly, trying to net a part of him. She needed but to touch him, and even his thick clothes wouldn't protect him. She seized an arm, and only an instant before releasing her power realized that it was the leather Kara wore.
"Where are you?" Kara growled. "You can't get away. Give it up!"
Colin scrambled across the carpet. Power or not, they needed light, or they were going to be in a great deal of trouble. She found the bookcase against the wall and felt along its lower ledge until she saw a faint sliver of light coming from beneath the door. Men were banging on the other side, calling out, wanting to know if there was trouble. Her fingers skimmed up the edge of the molded stile of the door toward the handle as she lurched to her feet. She stepped on the hem of her dress and tripped, stumbling forward, landing on her elbows with a bone-jarring thud. Something heavy smashed into the door where she had almost stood a moment before and crashed down onto her back. The man laughed in the darkness. As she flailed to shove the thing off, her arms whacked painfully against the sharp edges of the stretcher bars of a chair's legs. She grappled an upholstered armrest and rolled the chair off to the side. Colin heard the air driven from Kara's lungs with a grunt as she slammed into a bookcase on the other side of the room. The men on the other side of the door pounded into it, trying to break it down. The door wasn't budging. As books across the room were still tumbling and thudding to the floor, Colin sprang up and groped for the handle. Her knuckles struck the cold metal of the lever. She slapped her hand over it. With a shriek, she was thrown back from a sudden flash and landed on her bottom. Like sparks from a flaming log struck with a poker, a shower of flashes from the handle filled the air. Her fingers stung and tingled from touching the shield. Small wonder the men couldn't open the door. As she regained her feet, recovering from the shock, Colin could see again by the flickering sparkles of light that still slowly drifted toward the floor. Suddenly, Kara could see too. She snatched a book and flung it at the man near the center of the small room. He ducked into a squat. Quick as a slap, Kara spun, catching him off guard. The air resounded with a hard thud as her boot nailed his jaw. The blow drove him backward. Colin took aim to leap for him before all the sparks extinguished and it went dark again.
"You die first!"
he railed in rage at Kara.
"I'll have no more of your trifling interference. You'll taste my power!"
The air at his fingertips lit with glimmering flashes as he leveled his full attention on Kara. Colin had to deal with the threat now, before anything else went wrong. But before she could leap for him, his curled fingers twitched up. With a contemptuous sneer, he thrust one hand toward Kara. Colin expected Kara to be the one on the floor next. Instead, the young man crumpled with a cry. He tried to stand, but collapsed with a shriek, hugging himself as if he had been stabbed in the gut. The room went black again. Colin reached for the door lever, taking a chance that whatever Kara had done to him had broken his shield. Wincing against the pain she feared might still be waiting, she seized the handle. The shield was gone. Relieved, she twisted the lever and yanked the door open. Light from behind the crowd of soldiers pierced into the dark room. Confounded faces peered in. Colin didn't need a room full of men getting themselves killed while trying to save her from things they didn't understand. She shoved the closest man back.
"He has the gift. Stay out."
She knew that the Harrens feared magic. They depended on the Lord Rawl to fight magic. They were the steel against steel, they often said, and Lord Rawl was supposed to be the magic against magic.
"Give me a lamp."
Men to each side simultaneously snatched lamps from brackets beside the door and held them out. Colin grabbed one and kicked the door shut as she turned back to the room. She didn't want a pack of muscle-bound, weapon-wielding men to get in her way. In the wavering glow from the lamp, Colin saw Kara squat down on the crimson carpet beside the man. He clutched his arms across his abdomen as he vomited blood. Her red leather outfit creaked as she rested her forearms on her knees. She was rolling her ajeel in her fingers, waiting. Once his retching had ceased, Kara snatched a fistful of his hair. Her long, blonde braid slid across the back of her broad shoulders as she leaned closer.
"That was a big mistake. A very big mistake," she said with silky satisfaction. "You should never have tried to use your magic against a moored Sith. You had it right for a moment, but then you let me make you angry enough to use your magic. Who's the fool now?"
"What's a moored Sith?"
he managed between gasps. Kara twisted his head upward until he cried out.
your worst nightmare. The purpose of a Mord Sith is to eliminate threats like you. I now command your magic. It's mine to use, and you, my pet, are helpless to do anything about it, as you will soon learn. You should have tried to strangle me, or beat me to death, or to run, but you should never, ever have tried to use magic against me. Once you use your magic against the Mord Sith, it's hers. Alan stood transfixed. That was what a Mord Sith had done to Richard. That was how he had been captured.